Hi there, I'm Ed Rowland from Collective Soul, and you are listening to Life Minute.
It's been 30 years since Georgia-born band Collective Soul stepped onto the noisy 90s rock scene. Their hard-hitting guitar riffs, introspective lyrics, and of course Ed Rowland's gritty yet soulful vocals solidified their sound in the post-grunge era. To celebrate three decades of music, the guys are out on the road with old friends Hootie and the Blowfish and Edwin McCain for the Summer Camp with Trucks tour. They've also released a double EP called Here to Eternity that they recorded at Elvis Presley's Palm Springs estate, the first band ever to do that since Elvis himself lived there. We caught up with Rowland recently from his home in Atlanta to hear all about it and more. This is a Life Minute with Collective Soul's Ed Rowland. So how are you?
Doing great. You know, waking up playing daddy and husband right now and getting ready to go on tour, you know, getting my last minutes of domestication.
The band's 30th anniversary.
Correct.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. But it's good to believe. It's good to say you're 30. I have no problem with it. Better than not being around. I like it.
And a new double album coming out on the 17th, which is awesome, by the way.
Thank you so much. Well, we recorded at Elvis Presley's estate in Palm Springs. We knew the guys that owned it, and Elvis had spent his last Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthday, and his last three albums were recorded in that house, but it had been dormant since he passed. They were about to redo it, and I just asked. I was like, hey, can we have it for the month of January? This is 2023. And they were like, of course, go in there. There's nothing in there. I was like, we'll put stuff in there. We'll stage it. We got furniture, rented furniture out there that made it look like the king was still there. Came in and just started with 12 songs. And the guys were old-fashioned. We record. Johnny sets his drum up, our drummer. Then we horseshoe around him. I present the songs. We rehearse for an hour. Everybody gets comfortable with it. And then, you know, no more than five takes. It's done. So they recorded in 4 days, 10 or 12 songs. We didn't go in to make a double album. So I told them to take 4 days off, go hang out in Joshua Tree, hike, go play golf, ride bikes, whatever you want to do. And I sat in Elvis's party room and had my vinyls. I'm a vinyl guy. I love vinyl. I had my record player vinyls brought out. I just listened in Elvis's party room and somehow came up with 10 more songs. And then they came back in and knocked it out again. It was fun. I'm the first man to sleep in Elvis's bedroom. Think about that. Forget recording there.
That's some inspiration, huh?
It really was. Everybody's really excited. The band stayed at Burt Lancaster's house, which is how we came up with the title Here to Eternity, because that was the big movie Burt was in, From Here to Eternity. So I was like, well, that's interesting. That's the title. And everything fell into place. I slept in Elvis's bedroom. Our engineer producer slept in Priscilla's bedroom, and we set up the control room in Lisa Marie's bedroom and just went to town.
I heard that actually Lisa Marie passed on the that you guys were there.
When she passed, that night, the ceiling fell in her bedroom. So it was kind of spooky. You know, people would come up to Elvis's house every day, just sit there and take pictures. And if I'd see somebody, I'd let them in. But then they would have vigils for Lisa Marie. They'd come there and just start singing Elvis's song outside. It was really beautiful, to be honest with you. It was kind of nice. So we'd invite them in and just go, hey, we're making a record here. Just make yourself at home, you know. Drink some food over there, make stuff at home, and walk around. It was nice to see, and we met very interesting people doing that.
And you're the only band to ever do that since Elvis lived there.
Correct.
How did that even happen?
I had met the guys that owned it about 5-6 years ago, and they were talking about redoing it, and they approached me about maybe doing a YouTube channel where people come in and promote their new songs, and then they do an Elvis song, very, very similar, like Daryl's House or something in that form. They'd asked me to do it, and then, you know, the pandemic happened and all of that wackiness. They still didn't know what they were doing, and then I was like, well, just let me come in for a month. Me and the boys, they were great to us.
Obviously, you're an Elvis fan, right? Was he a big influence for you growing up?
Of course, being from the South, you know, being from Atlanta, it's a very cult-like. Growing up, I remember having Elvis tunes on all the time. My dad was a minister, so he had gospel, hymnal music. Elvis was allowed, but it was a lot of Elvis' gospel stuff. But it was like the 50s music that played around the house till I was of age and found my own little niche and what I wanted to listen to. But yes, he was a big part.
Who were some of your other influences?
First and foremost, my parents. My dad was a minister of music first, and my mom played piano in the church. So that just introduced me to everything. But as far as rock and roll, it'd be Elton John and Bernie Taupin. That was the first record I bought with my own money was Elton John's greatest hits. Had no idea who he was. Just looked cool in the picture. I thought, man, that kind of looks cool. Then after that, it just started going haywire because I was, of age, and my dad would take me to shows. He took me to see Johnny Cash, took me to see Liberace, the Kinks, Eagles, and he took me to see Elton. And that's kind of when it just kind of, to me, it was like, I just want to be a songwriter. I'd like to be on stage, but I just wanted to be a songwriter, like Elton and Bernie and Johnny and Dave and Ray, Kinks. There was nothing else I wanted to do. And that was it.
How did you know you had this voice? Like, when did you realize?
I don't know, because my dad was operatic trained. He was supposed to go sing opera in Italy before him and God had a talk, and he decided he wanted to be a minister. He had this beautiful baritone operatic voice, and then I come out. Took me years to get comfortable with how I sounded, but it's just how I sound. My dad was always so supportive about it. I was like, well, have the full body. Like, he goes, not everybody does. He goes, I think it's great. Just keep doing what you're doing. Find it. And just kept going. Just stay in pitch.
And you do. I mean, your voice is one of those voices that when you hear it, you know that it's you. It's nobody else. You know, it's the unmistakable. So it's very unique.
Yeah, but it took years to understand that. I mean, it is a little different, and that's okay. But you're always self-conscious at the beginning. You're like, oh God, I don't sound like Tawny Shaw or David Bowie. I don't sound like Elton. Finally, you just let go, and you kind of go, I am as God made me. This is all you get.
I do have to say, it's interesting you said Bowie because I do think you sound a little bit like David Bowie. I'm sure people have said that.
They've said that. I mean, he was a big influence on me. I get the Cars, the Rick Ocasek, Ben Orr thing, which big influence on me. So I do think there's things in there that kind of, it may be the phrasing or I don't know. But I do hear what people say that. I can get it sometimes. And sometimes I try to do it just because it makes me feel cool.
And what about guitar? When did you start playing guitar?
14. I had a friend. I'll never forget, I was at the lunchroom in high school, and I just said, I'm going to learn to play guitar. I want to write songs. And my buddy, who was the only guitar player in the school, says, I have an extra acoustic. So the next day, he brought an acoustic guitar to me, let me borrow it. And he brought me an Elvis book and an Eagles book that showed you how to do chords. I learned from that. And my dad got me a Barry Manilow sheet music. So I had those to look at how to play chords, which was interesting. Elvis, Eagles, and Barry Manilow. I think it was Mandy. Mandy was the one. Mandy had a little bit more of these crazy chords. And I was just like, oh, I'm going to learn these. I'm going to get it.
What comes first for you, the lyrics or the music?
Music comes first. And a lot of times the lyric, something will spurt out and I'll go, okay, that's it. But the melody comes first for sure. It's easier for me then to fit the lyrics into the phrasing that I want or what I hear, I should say, for the melody. But sometimes they come together really quick. I think I've only written two songs where I had the lyrics first. I just wrote a story and then I put the music around it. I'm not Elton and Bernie. I don't know how he does that. It's more musical for me first, just to figure out that melody. And then hopefully, most of the time, something just blurts out. I'm like, okay, that's the thesis or that's the subject matter. Here we go. Now put the pieces, puzzle together.
Elton and Bernie are two. You're one, and you're doing two jobs in one. So,
I know those lazy blokes.
and what about your brother? How did you guys realize you were going to do something together?
We really didn't. There's a 10-year age difference. And I didn't even know he played guitar. I came home from work one night to go see mom and dad. He was still in high school and he's playing guitar. And I was like, dude, I didn't know you play guitar. And he's like, yeah, I've been trying to learn. And I was like, okay. We just started jamming a little bit. He and the rest of the guys were in a frat band when I was in a basement studio putting all the first song the on the first album, Hints. I was just trying to get a publishing deal. And then Shine just kind of had a life of its own. It just took off. And then I called my brother. I was like, hey, would y'all mind learning two or three songs that I basically interjected myself into their band. Lucky me.
Let's talk about the album. Tell me about some of the songs on there.
Well, Mother's Love was the first one I wrote for the record. Oh man, it's such a heavy riff, but like I said, just Mother's Love just kept coming up. So I wasn't going to deny it. So when I presented it to the guys, I was like, it's called Mother's Love. And they're like, that's cool. So it was kind of that way. I love Bob Dylan, Where Are You Tonight? I recorded that live at the Ryman Theater in Nashville, which was a lot of fun and kind of a big deal for me. Be the One, I recorded in Elvis's bedroom. That one was the last song I wrote when the guys were on vacation. They were coming back in that morning, and I'd had like nine songs prepared, but I wrote that morning. So I went in and did it as a demo in Elvis's bedroom, just me and the piano. The first take, I forgot the lyrics. Second take, I messed the lyrics up. The third take, I got it down. So when they came in, I said, here's one I wrote. And I'll never forget, my brother goes, "We're not adding anything to that. Just leave it as is." And I was like, "You don't think we should put strings or anything?" He goes, "Nope, that's it." I was like, "Okay." That was interesting. La-di-da is what my grandmother used to sing walking around the house. And that was just her phrase, la-di-da. And I was like, "Okay, I'll write a song like, you just pick up on different things in life." It's one of the records that, you're always proud when you get done. We always look at each other as a band and go, "Okay, that's the best we could do at that point." But being at Elvis's house for a month, and we spent a week doing shows during that time. But in 29 days, we recorded the double album. I'll never forget, we were listening, it wasn't mixed, but all the ideas were there. A couple of vocals I had to redo. But we got done, we were just hugging each other. We're like, "Man, how do we just do that? We don't even realize what we did." And it's just because we got in a flow. And I always go back to, like, we're a really strange rock and roll band. We not only like each other, we love each other. We love each other's company. There's jokes flying all over the internet between us and our little group. We enjoy each other's company, not just musically, but just hanging around.
That's really nice and so rare.
It is. It really is.
And people see that too. I see it on stage. I feel it,
Well,
so
good.
that's really nice.
If we're not having fun, I can't expect anybody else to be having fun, that's for sure.
What are fans going to get when they see you guys play?
Well, they'll get the usuals that got us there. We're going to try to squeeze in three new ones and one cover, and then the rock and roll show. It's Edward McCain called me the other day. We're going to have him join us on a song, and he goes, "Y'all don't play with clicks or anything," because that messes me up. I was like, "No, dude, we're real and raw. If we had clicks, it would really confuse us. We're already confused enough. Don't we like depending on each other." That's basically it. Just 50-hour minute set. That's just kind of showcases the history of Collective Soul.
Who else is playing on that tour? And where is it going to?
Edwin McCain and Hootie and Blowfish, 45 cities all over. So, and once again, we all kind of grew up together. We're all on the same label. All of us have known each other for 30 years. It's almost like a frat. A lot of golf, a lot of joking with each other, pranks and fun stuff, like innocent stuff. But it's always good to be around people and bandmates and other bands that have no ego. They feel as blessed as we do to be on that stage and where we are in our life and our career. That's what Hootie and Edwin, both bands, bring to the table. And so do we.
And you played at both Woodstock festivals, 94 and 99.
Correct.
You're one of only five artists to do that, which is neat. Yeah. There's something about that time, that explosion in the 90s of music, too. It's just, there's nothing like that. For me, there's nothing since that I've really liked, enjoyed either. That's my favorite time of music was that time.
I agree. There were a lot of bands. I mean, you have the Swifties now, but it seems to be very limited to artists that back then you could turn the radio on and you would just hear the band live, Counting Crows, Green Day. And there was just so many to choose from. I feel like the younger generation's losing that. And back then you actually listened to the whole record. And I grew up listening to the whole record. Now it's single bass, which is fine. I got no problem with that. I think this younger generation is going to miss out on the experience of what I love, which is, even when it was CDs, I listened to the whole thing. I want to hear what that band or that artist had to say at that moment in their life and their career. Nowadays, it's all based on a single. It really is.
And is that vinyl that you have there?
Yeah.
Is that a double vinyl? Let's see it.
Yeah, look at there. All our pictures and all that fun stuff. Very proud of it.
I love that too. I'm so happy vinyl's back.
Me too. It never left for me. I don't stream unless I'm on the road. I love the experience of it. And it's not for everybody, but that's just kind of makes me feel, gives me a youthful feeling.
Oh my gosh, me too. I don't even know another way, and I can't name a Taylor Swift song. Don't tell anybody that.
I won't. I gotta admit, I don't know one either. I'm not gonna let you float out there by yourself. I mean, I've heard them. I mean, you can't help but hear them. I'm sure they're great. I couldn't even tell you who's in the top 10 nowadays, It takes a lot of time to raise a family, run a band, and write songs and make records and tour. Listening to music's not really my gig right now. I may have to get back into it. I got a 14-year-old teenage son, so I'm sure he's going to be jamming some crazy stuff for me here soon.
How many kids do you
I
have?
have two boys. So I got a 25 and a soon to be 15. It's a good age.
How do you take care of your voice?
I don't know. I don't do anything special. I sing every day because I try to write stuff. Just I noodle all day and play the piano. I don't drink hot tea or anything like that. If I want hot tea, I'll drink it. But I'm just lucky right now. I do try to eat correctly and try to limit the drinking and do no drugs. I guess it's just natural. Like, I feel like it's getting stronger. It's a muscle. So the more you use it, the better it should get. I'm not saying it sounds better. I'm just saying it sustains more. Like, I don't really lose my voice at all, which I'm sure my wife would love that every once in a while.
How long have you been married?
It's a good thing.
What does music do for people?
What music means to me is imagination. There's no boundaries. You go back to the Beatles, they would write songs that were just beautiful acoustic ballads, some with orchestration, and they'd be trippy. To me, the first rule of rock and roll is there is no rule. And that's where the imagination comes into play.
What's your favorite comfort food?
I mean, I would just say pizza just because that's what me and my boys always go to, that or chicken wings. That's just what we'd go for. But if it was left up to me without them, what would it be? I love tomato sandwiches. I'm really that simple. I just like tomatoes and mayonnaise and white bread and go for it. A little pepper on there. Spice it up a little bit.
What's something you always take with you on the road?
Acoustic guitar to play in the back of the bus all the time. That's definitely number one. And I take all my vinyls. I get one box that I get 50 albums in. So I take that and a record player and I set up in the back because I basically live on the bus. That way, if I get a hotel room, I can't, at night when I'm not sleeping, I want to write and play. So I'm not disturbing anybody. So the back of the bus, the guys give to me. So it's on my like really small New York apartment back there. Do whatever I want to. So records and vinyl and acoustic guitar.
What's something no one knows about you?
Oh, I know what some people don't know. I had scholarships in baseball growing up, and I declined them so I could be music, play music. I wanted to go to Boston and Berkeley and learn to play music, learn, just educate myself musically. I'm a big sports junkie. That I am. I do love sports. Yeah, we do as a band, so it's always a common ground for us to get in there. And it doesn't matter what's on there. We're, get in there and everybody put $20 on something. We're just having fun, just keeping it light.
And amazing, your parents were supportive of that.
Never question it one time. They were like, as long as we see progress, we see you working. They never question it one time.
What's something you want to do that you haven't done yet, or what do you think's coming up for you someday?
I'd like to go to space. There's something romantic about that for me, just because it's the next frontier. Be able to travel as much as I have and to come from absolutely nothing to be on stage with thousands of people. Like, what's the next thing that gives me that junkie fix? I'd like to get shot into space. I'm kind of cool with it. That, or I want a flying car. I mean, I'm not Evel Knievel or anything like that, but I'd like to have one of the first flying cars. I actually put a down payment, me and a buddy of mine. So they're supposed to be ready in 2 years. So I think it'd be kind of cool to just get in the car and traffic's too bad, just take off and fly over them. Kind of sounds fun to me.
How did you come up with the name Collective Soul? I did want to ask you that.
Oh, I was reading Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead. And I think the character Howard Roark was in there talking about we're all a collection of souls. And I thought, collection of souls, kind of cool. I remember yellow penning it. I thought, collection of souls, what about collective soul? Sounds like a unity, a true unity, a one unity, at which a band should be. To be honest with you, it's the only one all the guys agreed on to. They're all kind of names being thrown out there, You hope you live with it for the rest of your life. We didn't want to be cute. They're all over the place. But when I said collective soul, everybody was like, okay. It wasn't like we jumped up and down, thought it was the greatest name ever, but it's the one that everybody went, okay.
Did people think you were a Christian band when you started?
Oh, yeah. And we had to be very careful about that. And once again, we're not out to preach to anybody. I mean, I am a Christian. I have no problem saying that. My wife's Jewish. Like, I have no problem saying that. But with a band, it's a company and everybody has their own ideologies, they have their own political beliefs. And so you have to kind of steer away from that. I do believe in the separation of rock and roll and church. We're a rock and roll band. And after that, we can all have our personal beliefs and our personal opinions. But as a band, we have to maintain neutrality. You have to remain neutral because everybody, whether you're Democrat or Republican, so Michael Jordan saying they all like rock and roll. Every religion that we've been around, every religious person I've been around, all different types of faith, they like rock and roll. So why am I going to pick one? I want everybody to like us. May 17th, go get it. Vinyl, baby. Come see us out with Hootie and Edwin McCain. It'll be a fun show.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.